My name is Susan Alatrico. I'm a local Dharma leader and will be with you today to offer my thoughts from the third picture of the ox herding stories. So maybe Jerry, if we haven't already, we could put the third picture up. Does that make sense?
Oh, that would make sense.
Well, I can do it as well if, but then
Okay.
I would be able to.
Yeah, if you have it ready, go for it. I had it up, but it's not in a good screen share.
Well, let's just see here. Then I won't be able to see my notes, but
Oh.
hold on a second. I'll take care of that.
If Jerry just closes his video, the picture comes right up because it's the Seattle Insight picture.
Thank you, Tech Sleuth Suze.
I will close my video. Doesn't have the
That's
statement.
all right. That's okay. Okay. For those of you for the first time, Sims is using the ox herding pictures this year to explore the unfolding of the spiritual journey. These stages, told through the 10 pictures and verses, are traditionally a Zen training, though any spiritual path can be reflected in them. So we've moved from the bewilderment and suffering detected in picture one to the possibility of freedom in picture two. Okay, now I can't see my notes. That's okay. And
Oh, sorry.
no, that's okay.
What
I have them here.
do you prefer?
Just leave it.
How's this?
Go back to the big picture,
Showing,
please.
okay.
So we've moved from picture two. If picture one was suffering and bewilderment, the experience of not even knowing that we're the cause of our own suffering, just steeped in the everyday samsara of living and never achieving that happiness from things that aren't permanent. And so in picture two, though, we've tasted this possibility of freedom. There's been a slight heart opening in some manner, perhaps hearing a spiritual talk or reading a poem that touches something so deep that we don't quite know, but we might have taken action to investigate a spiritual solution, so to speak. And then to picture three. Is for me, it's like this verified experience that shows a taste of this pure, what we call Buddha mind or true self within. So to me, picture three shows that first taste of seeing the sacred within, the taste that may be brief and fleeting, and we may not understand what just happened or how we got there. But the purposeful capital S self and the body fall away, only leaving this experience. So these glimpses or moments of realization in my talk take place at the felt sense level rather than the conceptual level. And to me, it's verified. To me, it verified that there is this inner landscape. And so, if you would like to take that down now. So, today I will share this exploration in three ways. One, the truth of the moment is everywhere and anywhere. Two, things are not what they seem, a journey through the senses. That was two. And three, a little ox meets the Sangha. Now, if you can please take that picture away? I can read my talk.
Okay.
So first, the truth of the moment is everywhere and anywhere. Thank you. So we see how synced up we are. the practice of meditation is being aware of whatever is happening in the moment, as Jerry was guiding us, not necessarily choosing the moments to be aware within. We're simplifying ourselves, turning inward with mindfulness. So each moment is like a nut cracking open. That nut casing itself is sheer fascination. And there's the sound of the shell breaking. We see flesh tethered between tendrils. Is this being in the present to an experience without commentary? How do you describe the moment? The moment holds the universe, which is indescribable. So immersed in picture three, to me, is so many, raises so many questions. Where is the mind? What is the mind? What is non-self? Is awareness within me or outside of me? And I don't get answers. So aren't we just being available and open to what the verse says? I hear the song of the nightingale. The sun is warm. The wind is mild. Willows are green along the shore. Isn't everything just what it is? We have a saying, where there's smoke, there's fire. But in Zen practice, where there's smoke, there's smoke. Bhikkhu Buddhadasa, though, teaches that while the senses are how we know the world, they can become a trap. He uses the word prison. We live to serve them and to gratify them. We're always seeking pleasure through them to make our lives comfortable. There's something else to do. But by turning inward, we can observe the six senses without desire and attachment. Because when we look at them, all they really do is appear and disappear within consciousness, as Jerry was guiding us with the breath and experiences, sensations. We are released from the trap when we experience that. Here, no bull can hide. I also sense the bull cannot hide because the moment hits us in the face, smack. The Dharma is right here. But when the mind is obscured from visiting defilements, as the Buddha notes, there is no mindfulness. The self is busy. It's got a job. It's really working hard. It's choosing the moments to pay attention to. And a story accompanies it. It picks and chooses the nuts and orchestrates the how and the when they're going to be opened. And by the time you pop them in your mouth, the moment's gone or on to the next activity. So how can something so close be so far away? A Buddhist nun, Nu, from the Sung Dynasty, writes, searching for spring all day, I never saw it. Straw sandals treading everywhere among the clouds along the bank. Coming home, I laughed, catching the plum blossom scent. Spring at each branch tip, already perfect. Roshi Kaplow on what this demands. A life of truth, a life of full, undiluted participation at every moment and in every circumstance. To experience the core of a person or a thing, we must ourselves be fully, wholeheartedly present without reservation. So things are not what they seem, a journey through the senses. Seeing the partial body of the ox, the hind end reminds me of my body, which I didn't like. And as a meditator, though, I wanted to sit cross-legged, so I was going to run into pain. I sat through the pain. My shoulders were tight. I sat on my body rather than within it. I was a grin and bear it meditator. I vowed I was not going to move. I waited for the bell to ring. I just bypassed a bunch of moment-to-moment experiences. And at some point, I sat through a localized pain in my hip flexor longer than usual before shifting. I wasn't consciously practicing the four foundations of mindfulness. I just vowed I wasn't going to move. Then I heard about the felt sense of experience. The body's feelings can be seen as unpleasant and pleasant. My interest was piqued. I was given new tools to see inside this solid thing I called pain. So sitting in this new field of practice, I saw that things were not quite what they seem. Solid was not really, really solid. My body existed in a solid form, but it was also a field of changing sensations. I noted sharp, shooting, tight, wide, throb, tingle, deep, shallow, dull, ache, jab. This became my golden ticket to the Dharma. As Lauren said last week, when we are motivated to see for ourselves, ultimately the truth can't hide from us. The little ox within emerged and became more empowered. I knew it was real. I could do this. I'd felt it for myself. So what else was out there? I was leading the charge, picking and choosing my way through the Dharma. And on the road to self-acceptance, even though I thought I'd touched into non-self, which I didn't really know what that meant. So further into the body, it always felt like I was breathing from a short distance from the body. And about 7 years after I started to practice, and almost 7 years ago today, I remember an experience at a retreat. The sense of self being located outside the body fell away and came into the body. It was this visceral experience of knowing I was intimately aware of the body in the moment. It was like sitting in meditation when suddenly the body just breathes itself. It jumps and you're surprised that your body just took a breath without you. I spent days with sensations of breath as it swirled in and out, the shape, duration, and distance in the body changing. And the Buddha, too, rather than being at the mercy of sensations and feelings, the Buddha offers this different path through the first and second foundations of mindfulness specifically. This was groundbreaking to see. I am not solid or constant. I'm movement in stillness. Another glimpse of the ox came from an opening of the heart. Kamala Masters led a guided meditation on loving kindness. I was at the difficult person. One person jumped to mind instantly. I had such resentment toward this ex-boyfriend. And through tears, I was led to a place where I could no longer sustain ill will against him. I couldn't buy it. I just couldn't go there. And that has never left me. It took quite some time before I dove more deeply into offering loving kindness to myself, however. At the same retreat, I had a vivid memory of eating a bowl of oatmeal. Well, actually, I'm not sure what it was. It was in a bowl. And as I shared before, what is it to eat, really? I remember my mouth was watering so much before I'd even placed a spoonful in it. The shock of flavors and texture in that first bite drew an immediate reaction. I was close to tears with gratitude and amazement. And I just chewed slowly with this delight at these changing qualities, solid, thick, lumpy, watery. I swallowed hard. No more flavor, just texture. The sensual pleasure of eating disappears. I didn't know non-self or impermanence by name, but I felt this freedom. I was not standing outside the experience, even though there was subject-object. I was the experience for the moment. and self is not sustained in the moment. But perhaps we can't really capture a moment's experience. Maybe that's what the last line is pointing to. What artist can draw that massive head, those majestic horns? So how can we put into words that brightness we feel so that it does not ring empty? One teacher said that that's the role of poetry. I think that might have been Rodney Smith, Sim's founding teacher. We can feel instantly what that poem is saying, but we can't explain it. But the heart knows. Mary Oliver's The Summer Day. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper. I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who's eating sugar out of my hand, who's moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who is gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings wide open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? Lastly, a little ox meets Sangha. In the picture, the ox is half visible. I call it the little ox. What can't I see? Well, I don't know what I can't see, but looking back from here, I know that Sangha is all of the Dharma. But in my experience, I did not see Sangha as beautiful or as precious. I'm used to depending on myself and getting guidance from one or two people. Thank you. In community, Sangha, I'm leery of exposure and I'm burdened by the sense of self-protection and lack. I remember Rodney Sim's founding teacher who related the difference between someone being kind and someone being nice. I intimately saw myself in the latter. Nice has a bit of a distance to it. Kindness was more intimate. I would grow into that. But even while volunteering, I needed to follow the rules, do it right, and expect others to do the same. And when they didn't, I took it personally. On the other hand, the experience of dyads is powerful. This is that one-on-one intimate conversation with another, even though you can close your eyes. At first, scary, but I trust and have faith in the process. Plus, how could you leave the room? I couldn't envision myself getting up and leaving to the back of the room. So there I am. Inside the dyad, though, I had powerful experiences of surrender. The defended self dissolved. There was no seat for it. With reflections such as, what is missing in this moment? I came to stillness. It was as if something, this palpable ease just washed over me. And in time, the little ox would fall backward and be caught in the arms of the Sangha. These direct experiences are passing and fleeting. They reveal possibilities of being free. of being my true, pure self that pre-exists. But I can only see a little Dharma. I feed the little ox intention, persistence, and sincerity. And that is enough. Thank you for your kind attention. Let's just sit for a moment. I want you to be thinking about, and perhaps you can't stay, but I want you to be thinking about, for you, what is the brightness? What is the bright moments? You've all experienced them. What are those bright moments like for you? Oh, what cannot hide? What keeps you from seeing a glimpse of the ox? What do you have to put down? I think I have a note. Let me read. Okay. All right. I'm going to share my screen since I have time. Okay, so I do. So I'm sharing this. The reason I said little ox, for some reason this picture came to me when we were doing the ox, because I was up on a very top hill above Pokhara, walking around these little village roads, and came upon these three women who lived up there. And one woman at the time was shooting a slingshot down into the gully. She was shooting at monkeys, apparently, who were eating their corn. And I saw these ox, and this was the baby one. But let me tell you, this little one is so dense and heavy that I couldn't push it. Very dense and heavy little fella. And it wasn't until I showed Suze this picture and she really liked it. And I use it as a metaphor of growing, you know, in the Dharma. But it was only till I really looked at it, like yesterday, that I see the male in the background. I didn't even know that was there. I don't think I saw it when I was there. And if I'd known, I might have been more frightened than I was. Anyway, that could be my artistic expression as well. All right, friends. So thank you for letting me indulge you with that precious little picture. So this is the time where, if you have to move on through your day, you can. So for those of you who are new, we go into breakout groups with one another that I set up, and that we are asked questions. I hope you feel better, Lyndall. Some people are writing notes. Okay. Take good care, everybody, if you have to leave. It's really a wonderful time because, remember, I was saying Sangha is everything. And you get so much. Oh, bye, Graham and Hannah. Get so much of Dharma from staying in these groups. So I'm going to, if you have to leave, you can do that now. So I'm going to put those questions in the chat while I create breakout groups. Okay. Let's see, everyone. And then I'll send them again once you're in the group. But go ahead and take a look at them now. and or whatever resonates with you. You've seen the picture. I wonder if I can do breakout groups while Jerry puts the picture up. I don't think so. Cheryl, shake your head. No, don't do that. Okay. All right. I'm going to mute myself and make these breakout rooms, and please be patient. Or maybe I won't mute myself. Okay. Friends, we have about 5 minutes before we will turn it back over to Jerry, but we had a real interesting experience in our room trying to put into words something that is very illusory, like an idea or a memory or remembering. I thought it was genius, Cheryl, that you shared what you did, and Jerry too. So this is a time now where we can come back and offer, I don't know what's going on, or I resonated with this, or here's what my experience is. Whatever you'd like to say or offer, it's good. And you can just open your own mic, and without calling on anyone, I'd sure like Cheryl to repeat what she said.
I can go ahead and talk. But one of the things I wanted to say was, Jerry talked about being discombobulated and how, you know, the practice, just that glimmer of the practice helps him to realize he's on the path, that he doesn't have to feel good to be, you know, to be on the path and to be doing the practice. Mm-hmm. And when I got into the room, I was pretty discombobulated because we didn't really go into a room. Anyway, On Monday night, you know, Tueri gave her talk about this, about, you know, majestic, and how do we describe a moment, you know, I can't even come up with the words now. How do we describe a moment, you know, when the practice is working in our lives, and it's just a normal little, it's just nothing. And the example I used on Monday night and here is that it's like for me, if I remember that I had an intention to do something, like I think I used the example, I wanted to, you know, practice noble silence more often. And then when I, you know, I'm chattering away, it's like, oh, I forgot I was going to do that. And then I'll remember. And in remembering, that's the glimpse. That's the remembering to get back on the path. And then what was the other thing? Like remembering, like noticing, you know, like I was really angry, but I didn't react from that anger. That, you know, the anger is in me, it's okay, but I didn't react from it. So the practice is working within me at that point. There are glimpses. And like what Jerry was saying, there's like this hint of something, you know, like it's already with us. That's what you were saying, Susan. It's already here. But for me, if I try to look for it, I won't find it.
Yeah. In relationship to that, Cheryl, I often find it so helpful to say, I really acknowledge, oh, that little bit of awareness, I mean, you know, to kind of reinforce and recognize is really seems to encourage and bring forth that practice. The alternative is often common, just get lost in it.
Judith has her hand up.
In the Sufi tradition, there is a practice called zikr, and it means remembering. That's all it is.
Yeah, I think that's what sati means. Mindfulness means remembering.
Yeah.
What we call mind. Yeah. Beautiful. Zikr.
Zikr. Mm-hmm. Zikr.
That's beautiful. I love that, remembering.
Yeah.
Oh, Lauren, where are you?
I was thinking when you were talking about remembering and the little moment of awareness that Ajahn Sumedho, Suchito says, linger, to linger at these little moments of awareness. Because we all know that we have the tendency to focus on the negative and the fearful and that, but to cultivate the habit of lingering, remembering and lingering on the moments of awareness, the moments that we're actually cultivating the wholesome. And to notice if we aren't lingering and if we're ready to just discount it or remember when we do discount it, because that inclining of the mind that changes our habit is gradual and small. And I was just talking to a friend who's just new to Buddhism and meditation, and he's just seeing all these defilements. You know, it's really kind of cute because he says, "Oh, these defilements," and he's been practicing for a couple of weeks. And I said, "Well, I remembered the image of a bucket, and each drop is going to increase the amount in the bucket." And I said to him, "There's no hole in the bucket. Each drop. And remember, there's no hole in the bucket." So I appreciate this pointing out the gradual and the cumulative. Thank you.
That's awesome. Yeah, beautiful. Oh, we actually are. Jerry, I think we're out of time here, folks. So I want to thank you for your practice and thank you for your contributions in making that picture three so much more penetrable. Thank you. Thank you.